Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all these skills to address the subjects that we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon, Jordan. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. I want to make sure that we do justice to today's conversation, so I'm ready to jump right in today and introduce my guest. You know, it's interesting how life is, things don't happen on accident. Some of us believe that there are reasons that things happen, and we look to those reasons that things happen and just embrace the fact that life, if we look hard enough, has some sort of plan. So what I'm trying to say is back in July, I was at my alma mater, Pacifica Graduate Institute, for a alumni gathering. And I got to meet a lot of fellow alumnus. And one of the people that I met there was this woman who'd written a book called The Alchemy of Grief. And we connected. And I had been processing, you know, losses in different ways. And I've told all of you that with my youngest daughter leaving for college in the fall, it's been an interesting transformation this year as I kind of go through the work of being a full-time mom to kind of figuring out who I am in this next phase. And there's been a lot of grieving attached to that. And so it was wonderful to meet my guest, Anna Marie Fidel Rice, because she understands that world of transformation and grief. And so through conversations back and forth over the last few months, Anna Marie said, you know what? I need to come out to San Luis Obispo. I'm going to come out and see you. And I said, great. And we'll do my show and we'll talk about the book. And she said, great. And so here we are today after, I don't know, 4 months of back and forth conversations. We get to have a conversation today in person about the alchemy of grief and about the transformations that we can experience and do experience as we grieve and how grief is essential to our mental health and well-being. And so I thank you for tuning into this conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, we will be opening the phones in a little while. The number is 805-781-3875 if you'd like to speak to Anna Marie and myself. Or if you'd like to contact us through my Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or through our website, thereluctanttherapist.com. I can always be contacted by email, elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And you can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org if you'd like to hear things we've been talking about over the last few weeks and few months. And coming up in the next few weeks, I do have some topics I'm really excited about. We're going to be talking about birthing and babies and motherhood and how those things have changed in the course of the last 100 years. And most surprisingly, how we've turned motherhood into a medical condition over the last 20 years. So that conversation is coming up, and we're also going to be talking about education and masculinity. But today I focus my attention on the process of grief. And my guest today is Anna Marie Fidel Rice. Good afternoon, Anna Marie.
Hi, Elizabeth. Thank you for having me.
So let me introduce you a little bit to everyone else. Anna Marie is a PhD. She is a loss and grief educator with a private practice in Arvada, Colorado. She's been practicing for over 24 years after receiving her master's degree from the University of Colorado at Denver in counseling psychology and her PhD from Pacifica Graduate Institute in clinical psychology with an emphasis in depth psychology. Anna Marie is associate professor at Regis University in the Master's in Counseling program, where she teaches grief therapy from a depth perspective, among many other courses. She's taught at Regis for nearly a decade or over a decade at this point, and she also lectures nationwide on alchemy of grief. She facilitates workshops. In addition, she has presented lectures on the alchemy of grief to several Jungian societies. Anna Marie also leads a group of women every fall to Peru to celebrate the feminine. So I am so excited to cover all of these topics, but I think we should start with what drew you to the topic of grief and your book.
Well, what drew me to this topic was the untimely death of my niece in 1995. And she died in a car accident. She was 17 and a half. And there was nothing I could read that spoke to me, that touched the level of pain and suffering I was in for her death until the spring quarter at Pacifica. I started Pacifica, my PhD, 4 months after her death. And it was until I was in a course that next January on alchemy. And all of a sudden, I had a container for my grief. And alchemy is another word. It was a medieval process, a very mysterious process of transforming lead into gold. So psychologically and for grief, it's transforming death into life. Mm. Lead is very heavy, like depression. And gold is the ultimate, I guess, goal of transformation from lead into gold. And so death and grief, it's transforming that what dies in us into a new life if we do it in a conscious way.
So it sounds like when your niece died, you weren't able to find in Western culture any sort of grief work or grief process or grief management that you found helpful, which I think is common for a lot of people, that in our culture we have a very narrow way of approaching grief. Can you talk about that?
We do, and we have rules on who can grieve and who can't grieve. And I can clearly remember, and even to this day, having people judge me because I was grieving so intensely the death of my niece.
Because she wasn't considered close enough?
She wasn't my daughter. Mm-hmm. She wasn't my son. She was my niece, and that was puzzling to a lot of people. So the rules are, you know, you can grieve for certain people, and that's about it. And you have a certain amount of time to do that publicly, if at all, and that would be in a funeral or memorial. And then really people don't want to hear about it or see it anymore. So people that consciously grieve are still doing it in the underworld of grieving. And it's a very lonely, lonely process for people that choose to grieve consciously.
So it seems that the current practice of grieving, and if you look at the modern DSM-5 that just came out, right? That
infuriates me.
That you can grieve for, I think, 6 weeks.
Yes, yes.
And then it's considered clinical depression and you're offered antidepressants.
Right. Now it's tied to clinical depression. Grief is a bereavement. And then what angers me so much is now for sure people will be prescribed medication instead of doing what we all know how to do, but we've forgotten to do, and that's grieve, which is cry or wail. That's so natural, and we go out of our way to do anything but that, which takes a lot more energy.
So it sounds like we have a very contained cultural message that when someone dies, you get to grieve through the memorial service and the burial, and then a few weeks after that, you're expected to go on or get over it or move on with your life.
Definitely get over it. Mm-hmm. People do not. We live in a very future-oriented culture, mm-hmm. and we like to produce results. We need to know what's going on in the stock market. We're future-oriented. We as a culture do not respect grief and pain. And we have developed anything you can possibly think of to take it away. So it's always a setup, and it's quite tragic to me that we do not support grieving. My husband and I were at lunch the other day at The Rock. Where's the place?
Oh, you're in Morro Bay.
Morro Bay. And there was a couple, and they were talking, and her voice was loud enough that I could hear. And she was telling her husband, she said, I'm so sad for my friend I'm worried for my friend because she's so sad. And her husband said, well, why is she so sad? Well, she's sad because a very good friend of hers died in December, but I'm so worried about her because she's still so sad. And that was in a nutshell, that we judge and we put a time limit on this, on you're supposed to be done, and don't bring it to the office anymore or at all. And I just thought, of course she's sad. She's going to be sad for the rest of her life. But hopefully it won't be as intense, you know, if she consciously grieves.
So if we have a cultural norm, because I don't think we as a population want to avoid grieving or want to not grieve. I mean, I don't think we actively pursue grieving, but I think the message we've received from a young age of don't cry, get over it, there's nothing we can do about it, it's all, you know, there's death. I think the message that we've heard for so long, and with the modern perspective of mental health, right, being tied to this medical model mm-hmm. of looking at symptoms and, mm-hmm. and disease instead of looking at normal, healthy processes, I think the story we've been told is that this is the way we grieve now in these short bursts, and then we move on. But I don't know if the story of the alternative is out, and I think that's why when I read your book about the alchemy of grief, you actually offer an alternative way to work with grief in a way that helps bring about a healing and a growth that I find fascinating. So can you talk about what that looks like? An alternative way to grieving.
I'm thinking about when my patients come in, particularly for a death loss, and they often whisper, and they think they're crazy because there's something wrong with them, because they're still feeling so bad, and it's been 2 months since whomever has died, right? And I just give them the green light or their permission. Oftentimes, they tell me the story of their death loss, sometimes 25 times of what happened. And I better listen like it's the first time, because they're trying to believe what happened, depending on the death loss itself. So I just encourage people. I ask them, what type of time of day is the hardest for you with this death loss? They always know, morning, late, right before bed. And I said, just create that as your grief time. So it's not about the person that died. It's about you. Have enough respect for yourself, for your own grief. And just be with your grief. 10 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever you can. And I use the word tolerate because it's not natural anymore for us to do that. And I say, do whatever you want. Write about them. Cry about them. Whatever you need to do. I always light a candle when I do this for myself. And by gosh, they come back the next week and they feel better, because we build up walls to keep grief out. We do anything to get rid of it. It's like depression, and get rid of it instead of embrace it, allow it in, invite it in as a guest. No, you're never going to like it. It's hard. It's the hardest work I've ever done in my life is my conscious grief work. And it frees me from guilt and regret and could have, would have, should have, shame, all of that. And it's so freeing. And people, we have projected such negativity on grieving. And I will go to my grave saying that unresolved loss and grief creates on incredible illness.
And so the irony is, in our efforts to keep grief at bay, just in our efforts to keep depression at bay or keep anxiety at bay, that we inadvertently create more anxiety, depression, discomfort, disease in ourselves. Mm-hmm. That is the story in our culture that we don't really ever hear, is that trying to keep things pushed down creates problems in other areas. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. I'm joined in the studio today by my guest, Anna Marie Fidel Rice, PhD, and we're talking about her book, The Alchemy of Grief, and a new way, an alternative way of approaching grief that will actually bring about change and healing and growth. Because I think when we talk about grief, we feel like it's something we need to ignore or hide or avoid because it won't go away, or it will envelop us or overtake us. But what you're talking about, this conscious grieving, sounds like it's a way for us to embrace the grief and work with the grief so that we can find a new way to live in light of the loss. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 805-781-3875. If you have any comments, questions, or concerns, we always enjoy hearing from you. So I'd like you to talk a little bit about what conscious, you know, we know unconscious grieving, that is the norm in our culture today, where we go through a brief period of time, then we ignore it, or we just stay busy, or we just go, you know, we just completely numb ourselves from the experience. That's the unconscious grieving that's of the norm. What mm-hmm. does conscious grieving look like? What are the stages of that?
Well, I don't think there's stages, but I do believe that if we were more intentional mm-hmm. about inviting grief in like we were in any other part of our life, we would be a lot happier as a culture. Intentional. What do I mean by that? I mean sitting with the death of my niece, which I did. I had a grief chair outside on our lawn, mm-hmm. and I went and I sat in it, and that's where I did a lot of my grieving about her death.
So every day, just for the
every
basic
day.
Starting,
every
to,
day.
To find a period of time that you say, this will be my grief time.
This is my grief time.
And you go to that space.
This is my grief chair. This is my grief shawl. Mm-hmm. This is what I put on. This is a ritual I'm doing in honor of my grief or whomever died, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just to be intentional, and it's to do rituals. We've become embarrassed about a death. Mm-hmm. Look at the hearses. You can't see inside cars. Everything's hired out. Everything is hired out. It's we're embarrassed. Don't send flowers. Don't do that. Don't draw attention to somebody that just died.
Because it makes it real.
Because it makes it real. Even the words we use, Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. Casket instead of coffin. Casket is much, it just flows better, right? Coffin sounds dead. Well, that's what happens. People die, so we say passed or lost. We don't even say die. We can't do that because it's just a phenomenon to me how far we've gotten from really truly being with our feelings.
So if we allow ourselves, and because I think people are going to say, well, if I allow myself to go to that space every day, it will overwhelm me and I won't be able to pull myself together to care for my kids, or I won't be able to go to my
right.
job. I can't go to that place because it's too dark and it's too scary.
Right.
So why is it important to allow this period of time?
If we don't allow that time, grief starts to sneak in, mm-hmm. and it becomes very unfriendly and very mean. If we open the door intentionally every day and go for a walk for 20 minutes, that's your grief time. Mm-hmm. And then when I was doing that after my niece died, I would say, 30 minutes, an hour maybe. And then I'd say, I'll see you tomorrow at the same time to my grief. Mm-hmm. And that way, it wouldn't sneak in. I would look forward to being with my grief time the next day so I could get on with my life and do my work. It works. It absolutely works.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett with my guest, Anna Marie Fidel Rice. And Claire, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
I wanted to know if she would please comment on how even for those of us who are trying to comfort someone who's grieving, so many of our grieving comforts seem to be aimed at suppressing grief. We, even when we hug somebody, we're patting them on the back and we're saying, shh, 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 as in, be quiet, be quiet. Or we tell them, oh, it'll get better, or you'll get through this. We don't really even know how to let someone be in their grief. So how do we, as someone who wants to help, how do we do that?
That's a great question, Claire. Thank you.
It is a great question. Thank you very much. It's so simple. It's just holding space for somebody that's grieving. It's not saying anything, actually. When I do grief therapy in my private practice, I'm very quiet and I'm holding space. Sometimes they're crying for 45 minutes mm-hmm. and I'm just there, another human being to be with them so they can grieve. Sometimes that's the only time they do grieve is in their sessions. So I shy away from saying it'll get better or... Because at the time, there's nothing that could be more worse for them. So I hug them tightly and ask if I can do anything for them, but I don't tell them it will get better because they just don't know that then.
Well, and I also think that we tell people it'll get better or because
it's
we're afraid.
Yes, it's about
we want
us.
Them, right. It's our own discomfort with being in the face of grieving and around grief that causes us as a culture to want it to go away. And Claire, I think your point is well taken about, you know, when we do want to comfort someone, I think the best thing is to just witness the grief and not run away. Because I think when we're grieving, we feel so overwhelmed by it that we're afraid it'll overwhelm other people also. And so if we can sit with someone and not be overwhelmed by their tears and grief, that's comforting.
That's right. And it's really hard for people to seek that kind of support outside of a therapist office. So they have so much embarrassment that they're even in mourning or bereavement or grieving. So for them to even accept our sitting with them in silence, just holding space, mm-hmm. is the most wonderful gift we can provide anybody today.
Thank you for calling in, Claire. And it's unfortunate that we feel like we have to always say something when our presence quite often is just enough. Kate, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, I have a question about divorce. I've heard that it's like a death in the family. I was married for 20 years, and I feel I'm still in a grieving place. It's been over 10 years. I wonder if you could touch upon that.
Thank you, Kate, because I wanted to move into the idea that we experience grief from many kinds of losses and not just death.
Right, and I teach a grief therapy course at Regis, and it is called Life Transitions and Grief Therapy. And the very first weekend, I only talk about life loss, which is a divorce. And we minimize our life losses incredibly. So when a death loss does occur, we're absolutely devastated. And divorce is number two next to death. It is an absolute death for a marriage to end. And death loss is so discounted. Divorce is really discounted.
So how do we work with it 10 years later? What would you recommend for Kate? How would she start to work with this 10 years later?
I would want to know what brings tears today. What do you miss? Have you consciously brought that grief in? I always want to know what brings tears to your eyes and sit with that and what's unresolved about the divorce. Mm-hmm. There must be something unresolved about the marriage ending, or it wouldn't hurt still so much today.
And maybe, thank you, Kate, for calling, and maybe just giving yourself permission to still be feeling the sting of the loss.
Well, now you're bringing up something very important, because we are also projected to be on a calendar, and to our heart and soul, fortunately, do not know calendars, and they don't know time of day. They only know they're still hurting, mm-hmm. and they may still hurt. I will grieve my niece's death the rest of my life, but not as intensely, because I've consciously grieved. So what about this ending of this marriage? It's just to sit with that and take a look at what still hurts and cry for it.
Yes, and I think we underestimate the power and the necessity of the tears, the fleshing of the endocrine system through the tears, the fleshing of the emotional system. You use the term wailing in your book, and I can't imagine anyone allowing themselves to wail in this culture, because it's seen as being out of control and over the top and dramatic. Mm-hmm. But wailing seems to be that cathartic body kind of heaving the emotions from us.
Which is very natural when somebody that we love dies. How can you not wail? How can you not wail?
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. I'm joined in the studio today with my guest, Anna Marie Fidel Rice, author of The Alchemy of Grief. And we're talking about life losses and grief through death and other means of loss. And we're going to invite you into the conversation after a quick check-in to Pledge Central, because it is that time of year where we ask you to support our programs here at KCBX and the work that we do, the work that I do each week. I appreciate you taking the time to call in and support the program, support the work we're doing, support bringing guests in from Denver, Colorado to share their wisdom with us. It's an important part of our community, and we're rare in this community that we actually offer this service of conversation about subjects that we don't often get to hear from other people. So take a moment to make a phone call and support public radio.
and this is Public Radio KCBX. Support for KCBX is provided by Cal Poly Arts, presenting the Celtic Fiddlers Natalie McMasters and Donald Leahy with their entire family in Visions of Cape Breton and beyond. Sunday, May 3rd at the PAC at 7 o'clock. Tickets at calpolyarts.org.
Anne Frank Lanzone along with Catherine Johnson in Pledge Center this afternoon. As Elizabeth takes a quick break, we hope to hear from you this afternoon. Let us know that you appreciate this show and all of the programs that you listen to on Public Radio KCBX.
Good afternoon. It's Catherine here, and happy to be here with you this afternoon. And I think Elizabeth said it very well, that there aren't many places in the community or certainly on the radio dial where you can hear the kinds of conversations like the one that you're hearing today on The Reluctant Therapist. If that's something that you appreciate, that you value, and that you haven't yet had a chance to renew your financial support to the station, we would love to hear from you this afternoon. The number to call is 549-8855. You can reach us toll-free, 800-549-8855.
And as you're hearing today, Elizabeth doesn't shy away from important issues that confront all of us, and she brings them to us, and she brings guests from all over the world and listens to you and talks to you about these issues as well. It's an amazing show that we're proud to have on Public Radio KCBX. And it's here because of you. Give your dollars to keep KCBX financially healthy. 1-800-549-8855. Online, it's kcbx.org. Your dollars are what bring this and all of the shows your way on a regular basis.
We'd like to thank Eric Brinkman of San Luis Obispo, the most recent renewing subscriber to KCBX. And Eric picked up on the food bank premium, and that's something that you can do as well at the $52 level or above. Just let the phone volunteer or staff member know that you would like the food bank premium. And what that means is that we direct a portion of your pledge toward the food bank in the community in which you live, either Monterey, San Luis Obispo, or Santa Barbara County. And that money goes to provide logistical support to the food bank for getting food to hungry families in your community.
1-800-549-8855. Online, it's kcbx.org. Let's hear from you this afternoon, and we'll be getting back to The Reluctant Therapist.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and joined in studio today with, I'm Elizabeth Barrett with my guest, Anna Marie Fidel Rice. We're talking about grief and the transformative opportunities that come with grieving. So we talked about the first half of the program about grief itself and how in our Western culture, we allow very little time or space. We treat grief like a pathology, like a medical illness, when it's the most natural of processes, like giving birth. Death is also a piece of that. And then the grieving of the loss of the death of that relationship, the ending of that relationship. We grieve that. And we go into a place, a state of disorganization in the grief until we find a new life. That's what grieving is. It's that tunnel that we go through until we come out the other side in a new life. Mm-hmm. But because we shut down the processes of grief in our culture, because we don't allow it to move through the body, through the soul, through the psyche, we find many people who never get to the other side of the new life. Mm-hmm. They just become stuck in this space. So we invite you to also be part of this conversation, 805-781-3875, if anything has caught your attention or something you'd like to share or ask about. But Anna Marie, can you talk about, from your book, The Alchemy of Grief? Alchemy means transformation. So what does that look like, being able to actually use grief to build a new life?
Well, I can speak the best from my own experience. The time that I heard that my niece was killed, something went off in my entire body and my psyche, and anything that was a priority to me before learning of her death became very low on my priority list. And I knew that something had changed drastically inside of me. And I wasn't the same person, because part of me, my guess, has died with her. And I needed to have a new normal. But at the time, there wasn't a container or a pathway that was holding me at all. I was so lost. I was just floating, until I took this course at Pacifica on alchemy. And I refer to alchemy as she, because grief is a feminine process.
Oh, so that's important, because I think we don't think in terms of things being feminine energy or masculine energy. But our culture is very masculine, patriarchal, doers.
We are doers. We are producers. We want results. We are logical, linear thinkers. Mm-hmm. And so
that's how we've won the West and become the culture that we are.
Exactly. It's all really fabulous and powerful, but it's so out of balance. Mm-hmm. So how do you tackle grief? How do you understand grief? Well, that's the problem right there. There's no understanding.
So what
is a feeling? It's feeling grief.
So the feminine is the feeling.
It's the process. Grief is process. It's not a checkoff list. We feel, which is different than logic. So how does it make sense when you hear the first note of a song after somebody that you love dies, you start to cry? Hearing the first note of a song, that makes no sense enough. That's grief. Grief.
Finding its channel.
Finding its channel, however it can. What creates tears? What creates your throat to, your eyes to well up, and there's a knot in your stomach? And we have been taught to stop it and push it down,
not for fear it'll over. I just keep going back
out
to that.
Of control.
It's the fear of losing control. Pull, the fear,
right,
of going to the dark. So I think it's important to talk then about, for people who are saying, okay, I'm going to give it a shot, I'm going to allow the grief to visit me. But I think we need to go through that process, those stages, to that new transformation, that new life. What does that look like? What do we have to endure to get there?
Well, I don't want to say we have to endure hell, but sometimes it feels like hell. I can remember going through the mortificatio part of alchemy, where there is a quote, deathing. To die.
Okay.
That has to happen. Something in you is dead.
So the relationship dies. It's, a piece of you dies.
And
with
not
it.
Only the relationship, the future dies. When mm-hmm. a child dies, the future dies. Your dreams die. I mean, and being in that, and then what comes with that is a process of alchemy called solutio. And that's the fluid, the water. And those are the tears mm-hmm. we cry. Endless, endless tears. When I would cry, I thought I would have no tears left, and more tears would come. That's what our tears are for. Not only for joy and for sorrow. And then I could feel myself moving to this new process called calcinatio, where I got so angry. And calcinatio is the heat of alchemy. Mm-hmm. It's, and you can say that's rage or anger as to, why did she die? 17 and a half. Why didn't she wear her seatbelt? What in the hell was wrong with her? And all this stuff that goes on. We get so angry. When somebody says they're not angry when their loved one dies, I'm thinking, right.
They're stopping something.
They're stopping their anger. Mm-hmm. How are we not angry when somebody that we love dies? And then we move to a process called coagulatio. And for me, I started to feel grounded again. Mm. I started to feel stable again in a different, in a new way, in a better way, in a more rich way. And another process called sublimatio, which was a spiritual piece for me of just feeling lots of synchronicities. I felt lighter. I felt, I don't know, there was a grace, a new sacredness that I could experience. Now, it's not that they all come in order. I keep seeing this image of circular mm-hmm. when I'm talking about these processes of alchemy. And of course, the grand goal of alchemy is kuniunctio, and that means the marriage of the opposites. So a death has occurred that's led in depression. If we go through these processes of alchemy, find our way to the gold, which is freedom.
And one of the things you write in the book, which I love, is if we allow ourselves to consciously grieve endings and manage the psychological aspect of change, successful suffering can lead to increased empathy, improved ability for relationships, the dissolution of narcissistic structures such as arrogance, increased wisdom, a new sense of self, and greater capacity for humor and play. Mm-hmm. You know, it's in shutting the grief down that we no longer can feel the beauty of life. And so what I learned from this book is the process of the alchemy, turning that lead weight of grief mm-hmm. and going through the dark and going to the fluid and heating up the anger and processing. We have this opportunity actually for greater wisdom. Gracie, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Hi. You were talking about other types of grief.
Yes.
And I'm going through a job loss right now. And it's kind of a weird situation because I'm under contract. I was told 2 months ago, I still have another month, that my contract is not going to get picked up. And it's a second career for me, and it's a career that I found I absolutely love. It's perfect. And Sunday nights, I tend to find myself just crying and being so sad.
I can hear it in your voice today.
I'm not going to be able to get back into this career mm-hmm. again, you know, find another comparable position. And my husband doesn't know how to console me. He just says, you can't do this to yourself. Don't do this. But I keep telling him, I need to do this. I'm going to feel sad and you have to accept it. But I don't know how to help him help me.
To give him the space, because our men are doers, our masculine energy doers want to fix things. And so his natural drive to wanting to care for you is so beautiful. And I think what he's asking is, tell me how I can fix this. And so maybe he can fix you some tea. You know, maybe he can fix you a comfy space to sit and really be with the feelings. And to tell him, you know, I'm going to take an hour every Sunday, or I'm going to take 10 minutes every afternoon to just be with this. And so fix me an area where I can do that. And I think if he knows that he has a job and can feel like he's fixing, mm-hmm. that he won't feel so compelled to tell you to move on and move over it, and move, mm-hmm. you know, get through. I'm so glad you called in, because that was the next thing I want to talk about, is that these losses of our work, our life's work, and things we're passionate about are huge blows to our sense of self. So, Gracie, I hope you will take the time to really feel. Oh, I'm sorry. I think I lost her there. But what do you say about these losses in life? Because you and I had talked earlier about these different grievings, these losses, they pile up, right?
Well,
we don't recognize them as being grief. And so we get to a point in our life where all of a sudden we have migraines, or we have backaches, or we have shingles, because we have not processed grief and it comes out and manifests mm-hmm. physically. How do we work with these things?
Well, I'm listening. When I was listening to Gracie talk, and I heard the tears coming, I had to wonder to myself, what is being triggered? What is this end of this contract also triggering in something years ago mm. that's come up again for her? She may not know what that is consciously, but my guess is there's a loss that she endured in her life that is surfacing again, because through, and it's being triggered. She doesn't know what it is yet, but the loss of this contract, there's something there. There's something much deeper there for her. And you're right. We stack them up unresolved.
We just say, well, you lost that job, move on.
You'll get
you
another
lost
job.
That relationship,
or,
move on.
Or you miscarried. Well, you'll have what people tell people that lose babies is just kind of horrifying to me. And the fact of the matter is, that's a really disenfranchised grief.
Well, and I think timely is the earthquake that happened in Nepal. is think about the loss of heritage sites, that people will grieve 12,000 years of these holy spaces. You know, we're grieving the loss of this. We grieve the loss of environment. You know, part of me feels like all of us, as part of our daily practice, need to set aside 10, 15, 20 minutes to wail and cry and grieve all of these things mm-hmm. that we lose in our life that we don't allow ourselves to sit with.
Well, to grieve and cry for those that can't, mm-hmm. and to grieve and cry daily, 10 to 15 minutes, for the world. Mm-hmm. There's so much loss out there today.
And to not feel so alone with the feelings of grief or sadness. And I say quite often on the show, I wonder how much depression that people experience has nothing to do with their own biological being, but has everything to do with unresolved grief and loss. Al, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind today?
Well, I was just thinking about the process of consciously grieving. Mm-hmm. And I lost a son who was killed at 7. Oh. And it's been a while. It's been almost 30 years. But what I found that naturally, as I was driving down the road, weeks after he had passed, that I would have to just pull over and just wail and just cry my eyes out.
Yep.
And it felt so good to do that, and I was able to get on with my day at the end of it. And I found that a lot of men, like you say, don't feel that that's right. But I found that to be the most exhilarating and relaxing and mm-hmm. releasing mm-hmm. the moment of my day. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of like the way like she said, that time to grieve, where I would just sit there and just cry and think about him. And then I just started writing to him. I just started writing poetry to him and just thoughts of the future and thoughts of the past.
And grieve.
And I found such solace in just being able to do that. And I didn't know that I was grieving naturally, you know. It just came out of me, and I just let it happen.
And I'm so glad that nothing blocked that process, Al, because it sounds like you had the most beautiful conscious work with your grief.
It was amazing, and he was amazing. He was so prepared to go. It was uncanny. He was so spiritual at such a young age. He would always tell us that he wanted to be with his father, and I would tell him, "You're 4 years old. I am your father." And he goes, "No, my father in heaven." Mm. And he ended up being exactly where he wanted to be. He wanted to be God's gardener. And it's just amazing how he was so prepared, and none of us could have even imagined that he was so spiritually sound and ready to go.
Al, thank you so much for sharing that, and thank you also from a male perspective of having the courage to talk about that, because I think that's the shift we need in our culture, is to bring in this space for all men and women and children to feel and process. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because Al said, I didn't know that it was normal, because no one ever taught him. Mm-hmm. We don't teach our children grief.
No.
Why?
I was lucky, but I spent an hour on the street with him while he was dead, and I wouldn't let him put him in a body bag. I said, go grab his blanket, his favorite blanket, and that's what we wrapped him in and put him in the hearse. Mm. But what else can I tell you? Mm. It's just amazing that that grieving process, men need to know that it's all right to cry. And I tell people that have lost kids, that I deal with high school age kids now, and I tell them not to shut down, but to remember those wonderful times that you had with that person, and keep those memories alive, and talk about the good things and the wonderful things that person did while they were alive, not just to shut it down and forget about all that stuff, and that seems to bring some relief to the grief.
Or at least a place to start working with it. Al, thank you so much for calling in. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest, Anna Marie Fidel-Rice. So Anna Marie, you know, how do we make space for those losses in our lives that pile up? And then when we do have a death loss, we don't have any capacity mm-hmm. to grieve. We've shut down all feeling. How would we tell someone right today to start even looking at their life losses aside from their death losses?
Well, what I do in the grief therapy class the first weekend is I have the students create a, quote, change line.
Okay.
And I have them start from birth to current age, and I have them list every significant change they've experienced in their life. No death losses, just changes. And they start to see a pattern. And, oh my gosh, they moved 5 times and they never really got to experience how sad that was to leave their childhood friends one more time, or to see that the parents divorced 2 and 3 times, or to see the end of relationships, or, oh, I had 3 miscarriages within 3 years, and I never really grieved that, or abortions. Mm-hmm. I mean, the losses are insurmountable, and in today's culture, the amount of addiction that parents are enduring. Are there children going to survive these or not?
Losing our children to addiction.
Losing our children to addiction. Mm-hmm. And to even fathom that can happen. And it's happening right now. Somebody probably died right now. And just living with, is she going to die? Mm-hmm. Is she going to make it? Living with that constant grief.
Yeah, and I think, too, you talk a bit about things we're allowed to grieve. You know, we're not allowed to grieve suicide, you know, because it's a shameful thing. We don't even talk about suicide. I mean, we have so many rules about the feelings that, you know, I think I talked about Nepal and the grieving that's going to happen there. And I think one of the things that we don't pay attention to is the physical embodiment of grief, that when you are struggling with illnesses like headaches, backaches, shingles, I brought that up because it emerges quite often in older adults. And mm-hmm. I think there's a direct connection from years of unexpressed grief emerging in this way, coming out in these painful, painful ways that you cannot ignore. It's like the body's saying, do not ignore me any longer. I need you to grieve and release because it's coming out this way. Rick, thank you for waiting. You get the last word today. What's on your mind?
I found during the loss of six different people who've been close to me that I allow myself to feel things deeply, and I found that it takes about 2 months of really deep grief after someone passes or a significant loss to kind of get to the point where you can operate normally. And then if you continue that process, it takes about 2 years. And once you go through that, then you can be pretty normal, and assuming that you are able to resolve everything that you're thinking and feeling about.
Well, and beautiful that you notice that there is a period of time where we can't do anything at all, that we completely shut down. And so, Annemarie, what is the timeline? You know, because people do grieve differently, right? So what if someone is, you know, people, and we didn't talk about the loss of pets and the pain.
The acute grief that people experience when their pets die. The first 2 weeks are just, they feel unbearable because these actually are the only creatures that do love us unconditionally. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, that grief is going to be incredibly, incredibly intense. The time frame, it depends on the death loss. It depends on who died, the relationship. When children die, it often can take a couple up to 10 years, and the divorce rate is still in the 90% because they look at each other and they see the child in each other's faces, and it's so painful that they can't bear it, and the wife might think that the husband's not grieving like she is, and men and women grieve very, very differently. There's a lot of new normals to go through after a significant death loss. Your life has been changed forever, but you have an opportunity to maybe experience a new life of freedom you never have if you consciously grieve.
I think I'm going to leave it with that because I think that that's the message of the book that I took away. Annemarie Fidel Rice, her book is The Alchemy of Grief. How can people contact you or get the book?
People can get the book by going to lulupress.com. Of course, they can buy it on Amazon. and my email address.
Is somehow they can contact you through
the book. Yeah, they can contact me through the book. Can I end with a poem?
Yes. So, you know, you wanted to end with a poem from the book.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And this is a poem by Rumi, and I read this at the beginning of each grief therapy class. And he says, "This being human is a guest house, every morning a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house, empty it of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight, the dark thought, the shame, the malice. Meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond."
This has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And if we can leave you with any gift today, it's the gift of permission to find grief time each day for yourself, because each of us have things that we are grieving and missing and mourning. And if you allow yourself 10 minutes of special time to cry, to feel, to experience, you'll enhance your own mental health and well-being. You'll feel more, you'll experience more, and you'll enjoy your life. And as always, we thank you for participating in this program, and I look forward to continuing the conversation next Tuesday. And I support, not support, I ask for your support in pledging your support to KCBX and to this show as we go into pledge drive mode, and ask for you to take a moment to call in and let us know what you think of the program and support what we're doing on the air and support the opportunity to have these conversations week in and week out. You can contact us at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, run our Facebook page, or listen to previous shows at kcbx.org.
The preceding program represents the views of the speakers and not necessarily those of KCBX. This is KCBX. Coming up next at 3, it's Fresh Air.